Whenever I hear that Sam Rockwell is in a movie, I am automatically excited to see it. This has been going on for 13 years now, ever since he starred in Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
I call it the dating game. A pretty girl asks three handsome guys, who she can't see, silly questions, and based on their answers, she picks one to date, and we pay for the date. That's it. That's the show.
I loved his portrayal of Chuck Barris, the pathetic, funny, sleazy, real-life TV game show creator and host. Sam Rockwell seems to revel in playing the deranged and amusingly demented, and doing so with a singular intensity and believability. This fall, he brings that to Broadway in a revival of Sam Shepard's Fool for Love. He plays a rodeo cowboy who drives 2,480 miles, tequila bottle and lasso in hand, to track down his lover in a motel room somewhere in the Southern California nether regions. He and the whole production have gotten absolutely rave reviews and totally deserve them. Sam Rockwell joins me now, as far as I can tell, with neither tequila nor lasso. I'm glad he's here. Welcome.
Thank you, Kurt, for that fantastic introduction. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
I reuse it anytime. We can play it as you walk through the street.
Thanks.
In an interview in the Paris Review once, Shepard described this play as, quote, a quasi-realistic melodrama, kind of dissing it. I'd never seen it produced before, and this production didn't strike me as so melodramatic. I was expecting, oh, this is going to be this savage, dark, serious piece. And it plays as a comedy a lot. And so, which got me wondering, you're more familiar with the play and have been for years. Was the humor always there, or 30 years later, are we more able to laugh at that kind of perversity and tragedy?
You know? Probably, you know, there are a lot of laughs in it, and he's put in a few other little funny lines, and
oh, there are new lines in it?
There's a couple of new lines.
Huh.
Just little words like goats. Sam really loves the laughs. I love the laughs, too. I think it's a sneak attack, and I think it's a nice way to kind of grab the audience, and it's a very poignant, beautiful play,
yes.
You know, about intimacy. And,
yeah.
You know.
I want to play a clip. This is from close to the beginning of the show.
I'm going.
Don't go!
What am I going to do? Huh? What am I supposed to do?
Oh, you know.
What?
You're going to erase me.
What are you talking about?
You're either going to erase me or you're going to have me erased.
Why would I want that? Are you kidding me?
Because I'm in the way.
Don't be stupid.
Hey! I am smarter than you are, and you know it. I can smell your thoughts before you even think them.
May, I'm trying to take care of you, all right?
No, you're not. You're just guilty. You're gutless and guilty.
Good combination.
That's you as Eddie and the amazing Nina Arianda as May. This play is less than an hour and a half long. You two are pretty much on stage the entire time, going back and forth pretty much like that.
Yeah.
It looks exhausting.
It's pretty exhausting. As soon as you wake up, you're thinking about it.
Really? Yeah.
You love the play, but you know you've got to go do this, and there's this gorilla on your back all day, and you're kind of thinking.
So 4.5 hours, the countdown has already begun in your head?
Yeah, you know. You're already thinking like, okay, I got to go warm up.
And is that totally different than doing a movie where you just know your lines, you go do them, and it's kind of emotionally level experience?
Doing a movie is a much more tedious process. You know, it's bit by bit, and it's longer hours, but this is condensed, you know, melodrama, I guess you could say, whatever.
Yeah.
You got one shot. You know, there's no intermissions. You got one shot to kind of do this, and it says this play should be done relentlessly without a break.
Yeah.
It's really the best training for an actor because of the fact that it's nonstop. There's not really a break. I always say to young actors, you know, you have to do theater because it's like a gymnasium. You're not going to work those muscles in film, you know, as much.
Right.
I mean, you can do a lead in a film, and it's very strenuous, but it's not. This is really like you're up there and you're naked and it's happening.
Yeah,
and
as opposed to the slow motion marathon of making a movie.
Yeah, you know, and if you missed with the lasso you drop a line, you got to keep going.
You're really good with the lasso.
Hey, thanks a lot. I've been practicing for like a year.
I can imagine. I read several places where you've said that you like playing blue collar characters.
Yeah.
Whom this, certainly this rodeo cowboy you're playing now is. But you grew up in this, what sounds like a kind of artsy milieu in New York and San Francisco. So how did working class become this thing you feel comfortable doing?
I think my dad, I think I was, kind of a semi-bohemian working class upbringing. My dad drove a cab. He worked at the post office. He was a union organizer. He was a printer. He was an actor. So we kind of moved around a lot. We lived in the Tenderloin in San Francisco. But I would visit my mother in the summer, and she was singing telegrams for a living.
In
New York. And she was doing these little plays off Broadway, and I ended up being in a play with her, and that's how I got in. But there was that in the summer, there was this sort of bohemian existence, hanging out with adults in New York. And then when I'd go back to San Francisco, when my dad got remarried and got a good job. But before that, it was a little bit like me and my dad were
footloose.
Yeah, we were, you know, he was struggling. And he was a single parent. So everything was ground beef and a glass of milk and, you know, add powder, you know.
Yes.
So, he gave up his acting career to raise me and stuff like that.
So your mother, through your mother, you started acting.
Yeah.
And then acted, but I read, didn't study it until you were 24 years old?
That was when I started to take it seriously. I was in sort of a performing arts school in San Francisco. But I didn't really, I took it sort of for granted. And then I studied with William Esper 2 years of the Meisner technique. When I started training with Bill, I realized, this is a craft, and this is something you have to take seriously.
Well, and from what I know about the Meisner technique, it's very much about the craft. So you once said, apropos all this, to play drunk, you don't get drunk. You go to a bar and order a Coke and watch drunks.
Yeah, exactly.
Which,
you do. Yes, you do. I have gotten drunk and videotaped it.
Just to see what it was like?
Yeah, I did that for Confessions. And so we read scenes from Confessions, and my friend Ivan was there. My dad actually filmed it, and, you know, I got hammered.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting to watch afterwards. It was a good behavior.
You were able to imitate yourself?
Yeah, but I wouldn't recommend that to young actors. I think it's a dangerous I was young and my body could handle it, but, you know, I couldn't do that now.
So as – not to caricature these different styles, but, like, as a Meisner actor, if you're suddenly in a scene with – you know, Daniel Day-Lewis or Christian Bale, is it problematic?
No. You mean because there's
a method in there, channeling the character and all that?
No, I don't think so. I think good acting is good acting. And I think...
However you get there?
Listen, if you're playing a heroin addict, you can't take heroin. If you're going to...
Kill somebody.
If you're going to kill somebody or shoot yourself in a movie, what are you going to do, really shoot yourself? Or So, you know, there's limits. You know, you can do certain things. You can drive a cab if you're playing a cab driver or whatever. But, you know, there's limits.
Yeah. You said that, and it seems to me patently true, that film is not really an actor's medium because the director is in charge making the choices. Is that frustrating because it's not really up to you how your performance gets shown to the audience?
Yeah, sure. Sometimes it is. I've been lucky. I think that's why I prefer to do leads, because if you're going to get a scene, if a scene's cut, you know, you're still in the f***ing movie, you know what I mean?
Yes,
but it's like, you're not, and you have a little, you get more of a flow like you would on stage, you know, it's hard to do acting in bursts.
Right. I want to go back a few years to one of my favorite movies of yours, Moon. Your character, Sam Bell, is stranded on the far side of the moon, where he's been mining helium for what he thinks is a 3-year stint. He also thinks he's alone, except for his AI entity, the computer Gertie.
Hey, Gertie, since I've been up here, I've sent Tess, I've sent her over 100 video messages. Where did those messages go? Did they ever reach her?
Sam, I can only account for what occurs on the base.
What about the messages she sent to me?
Sam, I can only account for what occurs on the base.
That's Sam Rockwell in the Duncan Jones film Moon. And listeners, spoiler alert, it turns out that Sam Bell is not alone, and not even Sam Bell. He's a clone, one of several clones So you are the only actor, effectively, in the film. Kevin Spacey's voice is there with you. That must have been an exceptional and singular experience, being in a film all by yourself. And, of course, it meant the director couldn't cut you out of the movie.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, was that a pleasant thing to do or a really hard thing to do?
It was very challenging. Duncan and I were not really sure if it was going to work until we did the first motion control shot. We had an amazing CGI guy, and he got the two clones to touch at one point, which is very difficult to do technically. And so,
and it's a really cheap movie.
It's a cheap movie.
$5 million, he told me, which astounded me.
33 days, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I wanted the clones to hug at one point, and I was trying to recreate a moment from Midnight Cowboy where Joe Buck sort of combs Ratso's hair. And I was watching that movie a lot because of the sort of sickness that Ratso has and the clones getting sick. And I watched Dead Ringers a lot because it was, that's the best I've seen that trick done. Uh-huh. It's Jeremy Irons, and his DVD commentary was very helpful.
With his twin.
Yeah. That's the best I've ever seen that trick done. Huh. So I think that was really crucial.
So doing that in that movie, you pulled it off. I mean, there's nothing there. As your
Well, you had a body double who's also he's an actor,
and
he's,
so your face is digitally put on him.
Yeah, he looks like me from the back. He's a young kid they got, and he'd read with me, and we'd switch parts, and it was a very technical but really creative process. It was mind boggling.
What's your next job?
My next job, I'm trying to figure that out. I think I'm going to do a movie with Martin McDonagh next year. And Frances McDormand, and possibly Woody Harrelson. So
that sounds great.
That could be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good. I'll put that in my calendar for 2017. Sam Rockwell, thank you very, very much.
Thank you for having me.
You can see Sam Rockwell in Fool for Love on Broadway through December 13th.